Hello. Hi, I'm Scott Jones. I'm director of this track, Electronic Frontiers Forums. This panel is the spyware in the workplace panel. And the description that was published in the program was wrong. Hopefully, the people in here have figured that out. And, I'll let the other panelists introduce themselves. I want to open with a few remarks about spyware. And we'll go from there.
Hi, my name is John Pierce. I work for Internet Security Systems. I'm a QA engineer on the Real Secure product line, which is intrusion detection. You'll be finding I'll be talking a little bit more about that later and what it can be useful.
Name is Jeff. Most people better know me as Disturbed. I work in the IT field. I'm pretty much here just to kind of give an example of the horrors that can be expected in the workplace if you're not careful.
All right. If you're concerned about privacy in the workplace, you might want to check out this website here, privacyfoundation.org. There's a guy, I think he's out in the Denver area, and he has set up this is an excellent resource for privacy in the workplace and finding out what your rights are and what your expectations are as an employee, and also maybe what you should be doing as an employer and what you shouldn't be doing. It's privacyfoundation.org. Check it out. A lot of interesting privacy-related information on it. I want to start off with sort of a definition of spyware, and I'm not going to go into a technology definition of it. What I want to say is more sort of the human side of it. The thing about spyware is it takes advantage of an assumption of privacy on behalf of either the sender or the recipient. Where no such privacy exists, or sometimes it pierces a veil of privacy that used to exist. It's not just the fact that it taps into an otherwise secure communication channel. It also takes advantage of an assumption that there was privacy when in fact there wasn't, and that's critical. Because if you're on a basically sort of a broadcast medium where you know you're being watched, you're going to say things differently and behave differently than you would if you assume that you have some measure of privacy. And so a lot of the problems that surround this technology and also what it takes advantage of is this assumption of privacy. It's critical to really the definition of spyware, because if both sides know they're being monitored, it's really not spying. Why would companies want to spy on their employees? What's really going on here? It's not necessarily a moral issue or driven by a sense of right and wrong. A lot of it is driven by legislation and liability. This gets back to one of the key areas is the sexual harassment area. Sexual harassment law. Obviously, it's not conducive to have a workplace that's rife with sexual harassment, but the way the law is written, the liability is extremely significant for a company that tolerates even the most minor amounts of such harassment. And so monitoring becomes an important part of ensuring compliance, and unfortunately, this has led to electronic venues being monitored to ensure compliance. There are other liability issues, generally issues of liability, that do require some monitoring. And of course, just from a security standpoint, to make sure that your employees aren't downloading the latest viruses or they're not overloading the network, there is some legitimate systems administration type issues where companies really do need to monitor their networks. There is a law out there that governs privacy of email. Electronic Communications Privacy Act, or is it the other way around? And it's a very complex and difficult law. There are many exceptions to where privacy is and isn't allowed. The cultural expectation is that generally the workplace owns email on the work system. So that's the cultural expectation. I don't know exactly what the legal expectation is. I'm not a lawyer, but I know the law is out there. It does give you some protections. Some of the protections are stronger with respect to government agencies than they would be to private agencies. But generally, the cultural expectation is if you're on an employer provided and paid for system, that they own all the email and they have the right to inspect the email traffic that's going across. It's a much more complicated issue if you're reading personal email through a corporate network, and that's becoming an issue lately. It's very easy to read personal email now thanks to the advent of webmail, such as Hotmail, and other such resources. I work for a corporation which I will not name here, but they have just recently passed they've made a policy change. They've made a change where they have actually banned all personal email in the entire corporation. And this company happens to own an ISP, and the ISP has webmail. And they've even banned the use of webmail for personal accounts from that ISP that they own for employees' personal accounts. And, of course, they encourage employees to have personal accounts on the ISP, but they banned webmail. And so I had to ask why this was, because it is a big impediment to me. I mean, email has probably become more important than phone calls when it comes to managing my personal life and just sort of day-to-day issues. The answer was that there were a couple of users out there who were receiving viruses in their email, and they were going through the extraordinary steps in webmail of actually downloading the files and installing it. And it became sort of a user education issue. It's like you had just a couple of users out there who were actually downloading viruses from webmail and installing them and causing problems on the network. The truth is that the corporate email system is very well filtered. It's very tightly filtered, and virtually no virus gets in through that channel. But they were receiving, they were having a lot of problems with viruses coming in through the personal email channel. And so they took the very broad step of blocking all personal email. I think that's very unfortunate, but my response was, well, how about user education and how about using more secure platforms and more secure email systems that aren't necessarily a victim of this? But there's always going to be a few users out there who do the wrong thing, regardless of what the technology is. You have to get back to user education. And unfortunately, their response was they're going to take the broad method of attack and just ban all of it. So if they didn't ban it, though, it would create additional issues with regards to privacy. Is there an expectation of privacy on personal email? The law probably says yes, but it is a gray area, and I don't think it's been challenged at this point. So it's a sticky issue. Just overall, there has been a huge growth in monitoring of not only email, but web surfing and person-to-person communication, such as ICQ, chat rooms, that sort of thing. The law provides some protection for privacy with email, but there is no protection at all for anything that isn't email. If it's a chat room, if it's a news group, something like that, there's no expectation of privacy there. There's no legal framework for it. Let's see. So what you get is you run into a situation of violation of expectations. The employer has one set of expectations. The employee has another set of expectations. And the conflict comes with some violation of that. And the best way to resolve that is for the employer. The employer really needs to come up with a policy statement. They need to have a policy statement as to what their expectations are on their network and what the employees should expect in the way of privacy and what they should not expect. Without that, employers are kind of damned if they do monitor, and they're damned if they don't. And that's one of the problems that can occur. The other thing is the notion of at-will employment. Unless you're employed under contract, your legal status as an employee is an at-will employee. That means legally that you work at your pleasure and the employer's pleasure. That means that either you or the employer can terminate the employment relationship at any time for no reason at all. That's the legal theory, but in practice it can be difficult for the employer to terminate employment, especially if you happen to be in a protected group such as female, not white, over age 40. And so it becomes difficult legally to terminate without cause. But if you find yourself in a situation where recently you need to reduce your payroll budget, and you don't want to do that sort of en masse, you want to cherry pick a couple of individuals, it is really good to have some kind of cause, and this monitoring software can give you cause. You can say, well, we've monitored your web traffic. You're surfing too much to get your work done, you know. So it's something that as an employee you need to be very careful about. But as an employer, you really do need to have that policy statement defined. Without that policy statement, who's to say how much is too much? So that is one of the pitfalls that employers can fall into. Okay. I want to start here with Jeff Reagans. He has a story of what can go wrong with regards to employee monitoring.
I guess I'll try to keep it fairly simple because the whole thing pretty much stretched over quite a few months. I started off working at a university system, basically as just sort of a tech assistant, fix it if it breaks, whatever else, some software installations or what have you. But what progressed is, well, I was going to school at the same time, and so would spend a lot of late night hours up there and got the okay with management and everything else, and it all worked out pretty good. And started doing some perusing around the net, and, you know, let's face it, I am a computer geek. I was sitting on a minimum of a T1 line at all times. So, yes, I was using the hell out of some bandwidth. And was actually, you know, since I was going to school at the same time for, you know, computers, I did a lot of research and got a lot of playing around, a lot of investigation, see what this does and see what this breaks and whatever else, never directly actually trying to influence the network of the system. One day I decided, a friend of mine, I was looking for some particular information of which I can't even remember what it was at this time, it's been so long, but I was actually wanting to get out and look for some news servers. Well, at this time, I've never messed with news servers before that time, so I didn't even know where to go looking for them. But I had also been informed by him that there was a possibility that the university system was actually running a news server. So I was like, okay, great. Considering the IP scheme that they were running, it was kind of a hard ordeal to figure out exactly where they might have one of these monsters sitting. So I basically decided to use what little knowledge at the time I had of networking schemes and ports and everything else, and pretty much started running scans across the network. Needless to say, they saw a lot of traffic and a lot of responses. One of the subnets that I ran across was actually one of the main servers that big irons that they actually keep student records on. It sent off a lot of red alarms and stuff like that. Basically, what wound up happening in the long run is that one day I go to work and suddenly my key doesn't work for the office. And when I actually go to talk to management and find out what in the hell happened, all my computers have been confiscated. All my personal stuff that was in the office has now been in the possession of the law enforcement. And, the management there, without even asking me what might have happened or anything, they didn't bother to question me. They didn't go, you know, hey, what in the hell were you doing? That was automatically assumed that it was a hack attempt against the university system, mainly because of the fact that the port scan that I ran actually started up a few services that were, anybody that actually knows more about the Unix-based system and stuff like that, it started up a few INetD services, which is not really a big deal as a general rule. But they automatically assumed that it was direct hack attempts into the university system, and consequently, you know, pretty much put me under full investigation and couldn't really go anywhere. And I was without my equipment for quite a few months, and they would never give me a direct answer of when things would be completed, what they were really looking for, because I don't think they really knew. Or anything to that for that matter, and eventually they wound up giving my equipment back. And I think what they were waiting on is basically a deadline, because they gave my equipment back pretty much a few days after the semester let out and they had finalized all the grades. I think they were waiting to see if I had changed any grades or anything. They even escalated it to the point of basically doing a hard drive copy, and the GBI stepped in to do investigation of the data on the hard drive to make sure there wasn't any illegal information. They wanted to check and make sure I wasn't running illegal software, crack software. I mean, they were... It started off... The reason they... I'm trying to sum up the silliness of the whole thing. They basically... walked into my office, took all of what some of at least 50% of the computer's equipment in there was my personal stuff that I was working on that I had permission from management to do. They went in and took this stuff on the premise that I was actually hacking into the university system, and what wound up happening is that they did a 100% full-blown investigation and had the rights to look for anything illegal at all. I mean, even if they saw anything that was a mere smudge against the university policies, they could have immediately prosecuted me for, which I thought was pretty much ludicrous. But I guess in the long run, I was pretty much one of the lucky ones. I didn't actually have to go to court over the ordeal, and also very lucky because I actually did get my computer equipment back. And that's pretty much it, I guess.
Speaking up for the motivations of the employers, I come from a network security background, and the main thing they're looking for is most hack attempts and most damages that are caused by computer systems being compromised and intrusion are inside jobs. They're done by people who work for a company who are sitting behind the corporate firewall. Who know what servers to access, how they could use them to their advantage. I mean, a lot of times people will hack accounting and cut themselves extra checks, do that kind of thing. Or a lot of times companies, say you've got two rival companies both working on the same thing, one company will send somebody to get a job at the other company. That person then will go there, work for a few weeks, and then start snooping around and see what kind of data they can shuttle out. Any pre-patent data that they can steal, they'll give to their real employer, who in turn will give them a big fat check, patent it, and cut the first company out of there. There's a lot of money to be made here. I mean, we're talking millions and millions of dollars. So corporate espionage is a really big thing. So the employer said, well, then we need to make sure that we're secure. A lot of the protocols that we're talking about here, you know, things like POP and SMTP, when you're talking about just regular old email, instant messaging, anything you do on HTTP, it's all sent in the clear. When it goes out from your machine to the other machine, Telnet and FTP also, your username, your password, as well as every single thing that is going on in your session is there on the wire, and anybody who wants to look can freely see it. So the employers feel very justified in scanning through all of that, looking for anything malicious, because, hey, we're not breaking encryption. These are our machines that you're using. You're using them on our time. So therefore, we're justified to protect ourselves in any way that we need to. In Jeff's case, yeah, when you see something like scanning going on, they're likely to come down and come down hard. Now, the reality is, like, seizing your personal equipment and all that stuff, they don't have the power to do that, or they shouldn't, and I think that's why you never ended up in court. But unfortunately, since their employer in most states are at-will states, they can fire you anyway. Even if you didn't do anything wrong, if it's enough to get their hackles up, they can fire you. Now, when we're just talking about general security, I'm like, okay, and I can understand their point, and I can understand their reasoning. The problem is that a lot of the software that they're using to just look for normal intrusion detection and viruses and things like that can also be used to catalog and record everything that goes by on the internet. It can be used to track individuals and watch everything that you do online and store local copies of it, back up. And I call it persecution information, because this is how it generally starts. You buy all these nice, neat, nifty little systems to protect your network. And then management goes, well, what all can this do? And the IT people say, oh, well, you can track everything and cover it. Oh, well, you mean we can see who's trying to use Napster on our network? You mean we can see we can get statistics on how much time people are using Instant Messenger clients, how much time people on IRC stuff like that. And that's how it always starts. It always starts with statistics, and you you should probably be or should probably expect, if you work for a company more than 50 people, that this kind of thing is going on. It may not be the case, but it's always safe to assume. Now, where I think it really gets misused is then from the statistics, you go down to the hunting down people. And that usually doesn't happen for anything that you do on the network. Unless they see, oh, well, this person spent, 5 hours one day on logged in on IRC. You know, what work could they possibly have gotten done? Start a track on them. Or you say something that to some employees and they say, oh, we don't like that. Or they just don't like you and want to get rid of you and need an excuse to fire you. Then they turn off. Then they can have the ability with things like a program called Silent Runner. They have ability to track every single thing that you do and make a copy of it, just looking for an excuse somewhere that you violated their policy so that they can say, we fired you and this is our reason why, so you can't possibly take us to court. Have a nice day. It's just like anything else. The technology was meant for a good reason, but can be horribly, horribly misused to persecute people. There are, of course, ways around it. One thing that a company has a very hard time, if not impossible time, justifying, and especially in a courtroom, is breaking encryption, because that is illegal. And so if you send out your email encrypted and they go and break the encryption and say, oh, well, we saw this, this, and this, oh, how are you going to use that against me in court? That's pretty hard, because you broke a lot of laws breaking that encryption scheme. So anything you see, yes?
That's a question after your second
okay.
part.
Anything that you send over like HTTPS is going to be encrypted. If you use like PGP for your email, it's going to be encrypted. One bad thing about that, and something I like to point out, for home mail, I knew people who check home mail at work, and yeah, that is a problem because then you're not talking about work thing, but still, since it's coming in through their machines and it's residing on their machine because its final destination is equipment that they own, they feel justified in looking at it. A lot of people that I know who do home mail encrypt everything, and that's really a good practice, because one other thing that companies are big on looking at with, like I said, products like Silent Runner is anomalies. They're looking for something out of the ordinary. If you never, ever go on IRC and then all of a sudden they see you pop up on IRC, it may automatically start logging what you're doing because that's out of the norm for your specific behavior. And they're like, well, why are they doing that? If all your email is always sent in the clear and suddenly something goes by encrypted, they say, what was that? And they may capture that and they may break it, because encryption is breakable. It's just a time thing. And if you only send one email and that one email is encrypted, then, I don't have to catalog all of your stuff and try to break all of your messages. If I can just get that one, that one broken, it may take time, whatever. But in some cases, there are companies, especially when we're talking about pre-patent data, that email could cost them millions, if not billions of dollars. They may want to break it. That's not legal. They'd have a hard time coming back to you, but it happens. It does happen. So, I mean, if you were going to be up to no good, or you want to do something, or, you just want to protect your home email, encrypt everything. Don't do anything out of the ordinary, because anything out of the ordinary is going to get flagged. Computers are really, really good at spotting patterns. Give them enough time and enough data, enough of you using a machine, they can figure out about what your habits are. Anything that's drastically out of your habits is likely to get flagged and bring attention on you, even if there's nothing wrong with it whatsoever.
Okay, the other thing is, before we take the question, I have also been looking at and considering the possibility of wireless to a disconnected laptop that's never on the corporate network as a possibility. That may introduce new issues, which will probably not even be talked about for the next couple of years, but it may be the next big thing. Whether it's through GPRS or whatever whatever the wireless network is, that's probably the next thing to come along. And that may make the canonical window office more important than ever. So, the typical window office as a may become more of a perk than it's ever been,
Yeah. I work for a large organization, and I have web access at work. And I always assume that anything that I access on the web at work can be viewed by my employer. My question is, is it really practical for an employer to track, to look at every web page that everyone looks at?
No, but there are a lot of products that you can put in, some that integrate with a firewall that have certain watch lists, and they download updated zones, and they can say, okay, all porn is off thing, all job listing sites, especially don't ever job hunt from your current job. You will probably get fired. Things like that that they want to flag, and they can pick whole categories, and it does it automatically. Regular expression searches every URL that's going inside or outside of that firewall trying to catch certain things, and it'll filter it out. The same thing is like, it's like, you may not specifically be being watched, but you should always assume that you are, because there's a lot of things you don't know particularly what they're looking for. And there are a lot of things, and it's really easy to put in place, especially with all of those, all of the protocols that everything goes in the clear. It's really trivial to pick things out. And so if they have a little hit list they want, or if they have a reason to target you specifically, if they target you specifically, they'll watch everything you do, and they'll look for any excuse. But, you know, certain kinds of sites are more likely to get you caught. One thing that a lot of people don't know about that I think is funny, sports sites, financial news, all these kind of things that you think, well, why would they even care? Loss of productivity. And because of that, there are companies that make products that just look for you trying to do anything that couldn't possibly be business-related, and it'll just send up flags. If they've got this software running, it'll just send up flags and mark your name, and they see your name appear so many times, then they come and talk to you.
Also, one thing that
Hang
on a second.
A friend of mine worked for Nextel, and he had this problem it brings up is sometimes you get somebody who's really goofy who decides what the list of watched sites are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in this case, there was a Christian fundamentalist who was picking that list. And so bizarre things were you know, on his outlawed sites. He couldn't look up, you know, anything to do with I can't even remember some of the goofier ones, but, you know, anything with music, you know, anything with the sports was fine. Anything church-related was fine. You know, music, no. So that's it gets weirder. You would never think of it because it's often just like one or two people who figure these lists out.
A bizarre thing happened at work a couple weeks ago. I walked into the break room. I picked up the newspaper, and I read an article for a couple minutes, and nobody logged it.
A couple notes. First, I think needs to be reiterated is the expectation of privacy. Because a lot of us, and I think some of you up on the panel, work for companies where you've basically signed away most of your rights when you sit down at your desk, that all use of your computers at work is subject to monitoring. Any communication in and out is subject to monitoring. And the other is, let's not forget that we are being paid for being there, doing productive work. I understand, because I work for a company that does have a policy that says that, you know, on your lunchtime or whatever, you are allowed to use the computers for personal use, so long as it doesn't necessarily cost them other than some bandwidth. But I'm concerned from a little of the way that this is heading that it doesn't turn into, well, if you go to a porn site that encrypts, you're fine. As far as some of the tracking stuff goes, I think one thing that has really, for good or bad, hindered the employer's ability to do that are sites like, to name one, which I probably shouldn't do, is whitehouse.com. Because every time some news story breaks with the government that, oh, go to the White House and they'll have information posted there, the security people go nuts because they get all these, oh, people are visiting porn sites because it's just three letters off from whitehouse.gov.
It is. It's very easy to bump into one by accident in the workplace, and oops, you know.
Yeah.
And that comes more to the anomaly thing. I mean, different people are always going to run their networks different ways, and really it's never the IT people who decide these kind of things. It's always upper management, and they rarely have any, clue as to what these technologies are and how they should really be used. I mean, they're management people, and they say, oh, well, we need to keep people productive and blah, 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 blah. Usually the frontline people who are looking at it, you know, you pop up, oh, you went to a porn site, but you know what? This is the only one I've seen, and it's not, you know, that's not going to get you in trouble. If you're going every day and they got a big, long list, then, yeah, they may come see at your desk.
That's also somewhat directed by management. If they if HR or somebody sits there and says, we want to see everybody who visits any porn site, then that drops the reasonability filtering right off the chart.
Or if, like you was mentioning earlier, they're looking for an excuse to fire you.
Yeah.
And it's generally, it's not necessarily the technology I'm opposed to. It's how it's used and what is the policy. And did you even bother to define the policy? And did you bother to tell the employee about the policy? This is something that I think employees should be required to read on day one and sign off on. And it shouldn't be buried on some procedural web page that's buried way back in sort of the employee guideline page on your intranet site.
Yeah, and depending on the state that you're employed in or the size of your company, the firm that I work for, you do it when you are hired. Every time your computer starts up, you're notified that you're subject to logging. Every time you log onto a multi-user system, you're notified of that. Yeah, which for a system administrator gets a little boring updating all those. Sorry, I'm monopolizing.
I agree that that's how it should be. Unfortunately, there's a lot of corporate cowardice out there. They decide, they get the stuff, they decide they want to implement it, and they do it as quietly as possible. They want to slip it in, or it might be on the back of one of the pages of the 80 million things that they made you sign, and it may say at the bottom that it's subject to change at any time. Then they post it on some obscure link on the corporate intranet site that you can't ever see and don't tell you about it, and there are a lot of companies that do that. Just because they don't want the confrontation of the employees going, hey, why are you reading my personal email? You know, they would prefer to just keep it in the background and let it be a non-issue while covering their butt in case something happens later. Where they can say, oh, but see, if you had gone out to the site and seen our policy, then you would have known.
And this is the problem. It comes down to the expectations and not the technology.
Right.
The employer should be very open about their expectations. And generally, I think the trend recently has been to kind of hide the expectations and hide the existence of the software. And when that's being done, that's going to lead to more difficulties. Maybe the one aggressive employee who knows, who has a lawyer in the family and can, or something like that, and can create a lot of trouble, because by and large, employment law, at least in this state, is heavily in favor of the employee, and it's possible that an employee such as that could create a lot of trouble depending on the circumstances of the case.
And it's not always just the electronic privacy they have to worry about. You made the comment of you sat down and read a newspaper for a little while and nobody logged it. We actually had an impromptu outside meeting considering the renewal of licenses of the software that we use. It just so happened that the person we needed to talk to, we called him outside coming back in from lunch. The meeting took about 10-15 minutes, covered everything we needed to cover. Well, we actually, all three of us, got called out on the floor for doing so because we were seen outside of the building having a conversation beyond our lunch hour period, so we naturally had to just be killing time. And the automatic assumption was there was no work being done. And that had nothing to do with electronics whatsoever. That just had to do with some disgruntled employee who wanted to be outside in the sunshine, too, and was stuck in a cubicle. So it's not just the electronic. And as far as some of the lists that get covered, currently at my place of work, any website that has a tilde in it is going to send up a flag. And you would not believe how many work-related sites that are out there that I have to go to for computer research that have a tilde in the name of it. So, I'm plastered all over everything. And there comes a point where you just have to go, hey, look at the pattern. Look at what these sites actually do and keep within an established pattern. That is the key right there. He kind of nailed it on that one. As long as you stay within an expected area, you can pretty much keep your head down. But that expected area goes beyond just your computer use. It's how you interact with the rest of the employees. It's everything else. As soon as you raise your head up for any reason, it's gotten to the point now with the privacy that you really don't have any at the workplace. And anybody that thinks they do, it may be the next target. So you have to be very, 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 very careful about it.
See, that just scares the living hell out of me. Because, what we're looking at here is the corporate world basically beating the hell out of us down to the point where we're submissive, we're micey, we're, God forbid, we don't conform to the ways of the way they want us to be. yeah, we need to be productive in the workplace, but that doesn't mean we need to be 1984 either.
Okay, I have one more thing, but a comment on his, and it just left me when you were talking. But I'll probably grab the mic again in a minute.
One thing that at least is a hope, and maybe it'll happen, is I think this is going to be a cycle, and they're going to get really, really Nazi on productivity, and then realize that the being able to goof off for 10 minutes actually increases your productivity for the other time. And so all of a sudden, somebody's going to come up with the groundbreaking new management scheme of allowing employee freedom. And they're going to just do really well because, like, people want to work there. And people will leave these fascist companies to go work for them. And so, you know, once venture capital starts happening again, when the economy clears up, I think a lot of this stuff is going to is going to die off, and these companies are going to stagnate. I think they're able to get away with it now, and they're on kind of a feeding frenzy now because it's such a tight market, especially for technology, and they can just fire you, and there are eight other people who want your job, you know. So, but as soon as that stops happening, it's going to be just like it before, and they're going to realize they can't do that. They can't treat people like crap if they want the best people, because they'll go somewhere else.
If I may interject a quick comment on that, there actually is a system that allows that. It's called exception management. Basically, you let the employees run unless there's a productivity problem. So if they're producing, then you let them do what they want. Unfortunately, most, I actually graduated in management, and most of their systems are quotas and behavioral patterns, basically micromanaging to death. So all that productivity increase is actually causing morale drops, when it's better to let, you know, if they need help, you help them like a coach. You don't, not like a Catholic school nun.
I can give a very good example of that situation. Up until recently, I worked for IBM. IBM is a company that, for the longest time, they had the policy, very tight policy. Everyone had to wear suits. Everyone, real tight, strict systems. And then they started failing. They were doing so bad, they took a complete look at their self and system and found out what was going on. They loosened up. Their security policy right now is privacy before security. If any policy is proposed, if it violates privacy, the rule is not implemented. Their production went through the roof. The satisfaction and how wonderful people felt about the company went up, and people are so much more willing to work for IBM and wanted to stay with IBM because of this.
No, the
I remember my statement real quick, and then I can shut up. He had made. I know, I was talking 5 hours last night. He had made the comment of going to whitehouse.com instead of whitehouse.gov and how it may raise a red flag, and if the HR department decides to, you know, see a list of all porn. Do just a little bit of social engineering. Mention the latest news article that you've heard when you go in to talk to them and ask, hey, could you pull up this? It's this really cool article. It covers exactly what I'm talking about here. And I think it's at the White House. So just type, you know, go to the White House. It's, you know, just www.whitehouse, and they will pull it up themselves.
And also, especially if you're talking about like anomaly detection and stuff like that, that actually wouldn't get flagged because of something we like to call it the slash dot effect, which is I don't know if you guys ever read slash dot, but it's the technology forum. People posted a bunch of links to articles and things there, and you know, so a lot of times somebody will start passing around a link at work, and all of a sudden you'll see all of these machines hitting the same website that nobody's ever hit before, and nobody knows why, but they're all being directed there. And that raises flags not for the individuals but for the scenario, because the worry there is social engineering. Say I send out spoof an email sitting out saying I'm the IT department and all of you need to upgrade your software to this newest thing. All of a sudden you start pointing out to links that are going out and down and backdooring all of your machines. So that always, anytime you see a flurry of activity going to the same place for multiple machines, that always raises a big red flag. But again, it's not usually the users who are picked on. That's just more of a situation. And the thing about IBM is I would be worried too. My experience is the larger the company is, the more likely you're being monitored. Now, what they choose to do with that information or how they choose to catalog it, like a lot of companies are scanning all the emails and they're looking for viruses. They're actually, in a lot of cases, looking for certain words and combinations of words that might indicate something bad going on. But as a rule, they're not reading your email. There's nobody sitting down and going, oh, well, so you have to be home by 6 o'clock to get the kids to the soccer game today, and you got a bake sale tomorrow. All right. You know, they're not interested, but the technology is generally there. And a lot of times you'll see companies swing back and forth, especially with the IT downturn. I'd be more concerned because it was up until, you know, a little while ago, they had to do everything they could to compete to get in people because there was way too many jobs and not enough IT people. Well, now all the dot bombs are going off, so there's a big flood, and the employers are starting to get more aggressive. They're cutting out all the perks, cutting out all the niceties, and saying, well, now the employees need us, so we are justified in doing whatever we want to do. So
compare the atmosphere to 2 years ago. It's just an amazing shift.
The biggest reason why I know what IBM security policy is I was a security analyst for IBM. I knew the senior security engineer for all of IBM corporate worldwide. I talked to him on a regular basis. This was his policy, and he was so far up in the chain that he was two, maybe three people away from the CEO, and they were good friends. They go play golf on a regular basis. If he made this policy and he made this opinion, they followed it. And when they saw how much more productive it was, very few companies follow this policy because of the fact that they haven't realized this yet. This is why IBM, being so quiet as they are, they're doing so well. You haven't heard any major layoffs from IBM.
But you have heard of a lot of product announcements, and you have heard of a lot of new technology coming out. And it's one of those things, as long as this guy is there, and you're right, you know, a policy, and especially you've got somebody up on top that believes in it, because like I said, it always ends up being in management's hands. But if all of a sudden somebody patents something that they're working on, or that guy leaves the company and gets replaced by somebody who says, oh, well, you know, we got to change everything because, you know, I'm new to this job and I've got to prove that this exorbitant salary that I'm charging is worth something. Therefore, I want a short-term increase in productivity, and the only way I'm going to get that is to scare everybody and ratchet down on them. You know, a lot of personal motivations, which is one thing I don't like. I mean, when you're talking about these upper management, they're people. You know, just like anybody else, they're people. They have their own motivations. They have their own wants and desires, and unfortunately, they have the power to affect a lot of people's lives. Based on, you know, trying to make themselves look good.
Yeah, and one thing that you do have to remember is that if you are involved with a company that is filing for an IPO, or as many of us have lived through, merging with another company, all of your email will be retained and will be filtered through to see if there's anything interesting. Which, if you're an employee who doesn't mind possibly getting your head stuck above water, you can include what we used to call NSA killers, where you, every message, you insert a list of words they might be looking for down at the bottom, just to ratchet up their filtering software.
Well, that comes down to the same thing too: encrypt everything, even if it's just a recipe for chocolate chip cookies. Encrypt everything.
One of my favorite Usenet threads ran something like an administrator going, "My users are using encrypted mail. Should I be concerned?" And the immediate response was, no, stop reading their mail.
Yeah, and the key for the ultra paranoid is to actually get two keys, because the more you use a key, the less secure it becomes, because you have more, if you're storing all of it, you have more stuff to work with. So you have two keys. You have one key that you use for your everyday mail, and then one key for the stuff that you never want to get seen. But the programs that exist can't tell the difference between one key and the other. All they know is it's encrypted. So just kind of FYI.
Okay. Up on the screen here, here's a story that came out just last Thursday. I only saw it just now. California has passed a bill, hasn't been signed into law yet, that would give a measure of privacy to employee email at the workplace. But if you look down here, it says it allows employee email monitoring if the worker's business says such monitoring is company policy. Well, okay, you know, what is their obligation to disclose their policy and make sure that all employees know it? I think that it should be very strong, but I'm not sure if the bill has that, you know, if the bill says that or not. I think the practical effect of this bill is it's going to force every major employer in California to write a policy if they haven't written one already.
Unfortunately, the laws have come down heavily on the side of corporations. I mean, you don't really have privacy. There's not a lot of things guaranteeing you a right to privacy when using their stuff, but there's a lot of laws in place protecting computer systems. And by that, they can say, well, you know, the Exchange server. You know, we run Microsoft Exchange. All email, although you use a client, is really sent and received through that machine. We have to make sure that it can't be compromised. It's funny, we do a lot of things with the FBI, and I've been to some presentations on them, and I always thought it was funny. If you go up and you punch somebody in the face here, you know, you might risk assault charges in state court. If you threaten to pour a Coca-Cola on that machine over there, you can get federal jail time, significant amount of it, and tons of money for threatening, not actually doing, but threatening a computer system. There's some pretty severe federal laws that are on the books. And companies can use these as justification for why they are invading your privacy. And there's really not a whole lot of laws that protect you, the individual, and your privacy. Because on the corporate network, it's, you know, you're assumed to have, or at least in a lot of corporations' minds, you're assumed to have none, whether they told you or not. Pretty scary stuff, I guess.
More questions?
More of a statement than a question, but you bring up an interesting point, what you just said, and that's the dumb laws can be used as excuses. And so while passing more privacy legislation is a good thing, it would also be a good thing to try to get rid of dumb laws that bring liability down on people to who it doesn't belong, really. Or, you know, like the sexual harassment laws where somebody has stored pornographic images on their PC and nobody knows about it. They say that the company should have known. Things that defy common sense that get written into our law get used as excuses for implementing this stuff.
Okay, well, you know, here I'll get on my soapbox. You can complain all you want to about corporate lobbyists and that sort of thing, but, you know, when is the last time you wrote your legislature to complain about this? I'm not picking on you individually, but just as a group, do you know the names of your legislatures? Do you know who your senator is? Do you know who your representative is? When's the last time you talked to them? Have you written them in the last year? Lobbyists are spending millions, if not billions, a year. Have you spent that 34 cents to send that letter out?
Yeah.
So, you know, we get it. Our government is as bad as we allow it to be. That's what you get in a representative government. At least we have the option to complain to represented officials, and that's one of the things we should be doing.
A lot of them have email addresses, too. That's just a good way to get it off really quick while you're still thinking about it, is just go ahead and send them off an email very quickly. And if you want to, just turn around and print that out once you're done with it, and go ahead and send them the hard copy. Do it at home. Do it at home. You have a home network. Go ahead and do it at home. As far as stupid laws goes, I think I grew up in the same area that Jeff did, and there's a law that I've always wanted to test in the area that we're from that states that anybody driving a herd of pigs down the middle of downtown has got the right of way, and even the fire trucks and the police must get out of the way. I've always wanted to test that one.
It's funny, you reminded me of something when you're talking about porn on the hard drive. One really funny thing is, you know, we've been talking, a lot of the stuff we've been talking about is your own corporation and what they do. But one thing that we've neglected completely is groups like the Business Software Alliance, Microsoft's little threatened arm, you know, that's going out to all these companies saying we demand software audits. Well, you know how they do those software audits, right? They come and they look at everybody's PC, every work machine. They look at everything on there, and they're there for the sole reason to find something that your company might not have paid for that they can then charge them triple the rate on that specific software. So they go through you with a fine-tooth comb, and, of course, in the process, you know, everything that's on your hard drive is now open for the viewing public of your management as well as the auditors that are there. So there's another place to get caught. A lot of times when your company wouldn't even do it, there are other companies who want to make sure that they can get some money who will kick it off for them. So tough stuff. Don't store anything that's personal. Don't keep on your machine.
The employee monitoring business is one business that is growing, still growing by leaps and bounds, even in the downturn.
And on the heels of that, I work at a private school, and you can load it up with as much privacy stuff as you want, because we actually were able to get a pedophile out of our system only because of catching. He had gotten through everything else, but luckily he made a mistake on the net, and he was out of the system. So I would do anything to protect those kids. So we do have quite a bit of technology working, and we have people watching. And I think any employee that would know that we're doing that to protect our kids or what the kids are watching, I know that we would all, I mean, we all signed a 4-page user agreement to even be there, so works for me.
And I certainly didn't come up here to say that all monitoring is bad. I think we understand, well, we understand on that point, but I'm trying to say that disclosure policy, and certainly in this case, where children are involved, if you disclose that policy, I think it would even discourage anybody who's perhaps even thinking about it.
It's just not very bright, I think.
However, not to make light of arresting a pedophile, but almost all of the really bad laws in this country over the last 30 or 40 years have been done in the name of protecting the children. That is the final excuse of a scoundrel in our system is to go, well, you know, I want to make it so that everybody has to, who walks down the street, has to carry, you know, personal identity papers and say, you know, show who they are, because they might be walking around drunk and they'll injure a child somehow. You're in favor of protecting children, right? You know, and that's why we've got police roadblocks that check everyone's driver paperwork and license and registration and run you through to see if there are any outstanding warrants in the name of a police sobriety test, you know, because of protecting children, you know, and that's why we've got all these you know, server things where you can't host anything anonymously anymore because it'll be child porn and we have to protect the children. And the whole, you know, we can't, in North Carolina, you can't, a 17-year-old can go to an NC-17 movie, but they can't go to an R-rated movie because there's a state law that says you have to be 18 to go to an R-rated movie, but there's no law about NC-17 movies. So, I mean, you know, and it's all just dumb things that are done in the name of protecting the children. And so much bad legislation is done for that. But anytime anybody brings that up as a specific case, the number of actual pedophiles out there is minuscule. And most of them will slip up somehow anyway. And, you know, if they're going to be pedophiles out there, I'd rather them, you know, be just on the Internet, looking for stuff on the Internet rather than finding people, which we should protect, you know, and protecting your children. Ed Meese went off on Japanese cartoon pornography because it depicted little children, and so it was obviously child pornography. Not understanding that the whole idea behind child pornography was why it was so bad is because it victimized children by making them participate in it. So here's something that involves no children, but it's the watching it that becomes the crime. And it's a lot of really skewed up, crazy destruction of all personal liberty, privacy situations is all done in the name of protecting children now. And it's a very dangerous slope because it's such a hot button issue that all logic and reason is turned off at that point. And so I just wanted to add that to, you know, not as a directed at you, but just in general.
thanks for pointing that out.
Just recently, one of the really scary things that came across the news was the story of the man up north who, what they got him for was a writing that he did in a journal of a fantasy that he had. Yeah. And he's been arrested and charged, and he's going to be serving time for thinking. And it was in the name of the children. And that's a line that I think we've actually crossed a little bit too far over into, because that brings us into the thought police, and that scares the all living hell out of me. But it's in the name of the children.
Also in the name of the children are all of the students who have been expelled. Some of them are facing, you know, criminal cases in high schools for making a joke, for making, you know, a stupid 15-year-old crack about blowing up the school or something, you know, or the Columbine kids had the right idea, you know, I wish we could do that. Or just drawing a picture or writing a story about it, or, you know, or anything, you know, watching the basketball diaries too much, you know. And it's the same. It's crazy. It's all thought police, and it's all in the name of protecting the children and anti-terrorist.
There was a child expelled for drawing a picture of his brother who is a soldier. He drew the picture with him holding a gun, the typical type of equipment a soldier would take into battle. He was proud of his brother. He was proud of a military member. Because it had guns, he was expelled.
I want to bring back the discussion to the workplace issue. It does sort of bring up another issue with what if the relationship is not employer-employee, but what if it's student school or student college or something like that, that sort of crosses both of these issues. There you're in another very different kind of area, and you have a lot of monitoring going on also in colleges, and perhaps more so than before. And there are also harassment issues there that are somewhat different issues. Maybe some of the folks in education have some comments on that. Okay.
I already told my story. It's your turn. Oh, and another point I wanted to make out that it's been a long time ago, but you were pointing out that it was wrong for them to actually take my personal equipment. Mm-hmm. Something I forgot to actually add into that whole story is the fact that it wasn't until I actually asked them to produce a warrant of paperwork 2 weeks later that they actually went and got a warrant from the judge.
Your equipment on workspace, if they let you carry a laptop in, you can carry a laptop out. Unless they've got a warrant, they can't take it. It's your personal property. And they have no right, their rights to seize it. I mean, a corporation doesn't have the right to seize your property anyway, and the law enforcement is hindered by a judge signing off on a warrant. So if you're ever in this kind of situation and you go to grab your laptop and walk off and they say, no, you can't take it, say, well, where's your warrant? Do you have it? No? Thanks. Bye.
Unless you've previously agreed as part of your terms of employment that personal property on the premises is subject to search and seizure.
The only problem there is that wouldn't stand up in court. It's the same kind of thing, like you see all these non-compete agreements.
When the concern is protection of DOD data or something like that, it does.
Yeah, okay. If we're talking about a government, if we're talking about a government institution, then that's different.
Or contracting to the government.
And that can be different, and that can also hinge on a clearance. If you have clearance, there can be certain things there. But your average person working at a company, I mean, when I went to work for the company that I'm at now, I had to sign this thing as condition of my employment that said that after I left this company, I would not go work for any of their competitors for 2 years. It's crap. It's absolute crap. This is an at-will state. It's an unenforceable document on its face because it's an at-will state. But also the fact that they made you sign it as a condition of your employment, made it under duress, it's not really like signing a contract. And you got to be careful about that, because in a lot of times they'll put language in there that they know is completely unenforceable. They know that they have no legal standing, but it looks official and it looks scary, and you may not stick up for yourself and you may not stick up for your rights if you believe them.
I had an employer who, a previous employer, who required new employees to sign a document that said that the corporation owned anything produced by the employee during the term of employment, even if it was produced at home on the user's personal equipment, and that would apply potentially to freeware, shareware, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And that ownership right would extend beyond the last day at work. And well, no, I mean, if you produce something while you were working, even if it was at home, then after you left that company, they would still own what you had produced during that time of employment.
Producing children?
Yes. This was intellectual property.
If you're doing it at work, there's a problem.
Yeah, so I signed that too, and I looked it up. That's
children.
Not legal either. That's a good point. Can be. It's okay. Run by people, and just like anything else, there's good people, there's bad people, you know, there's smart people, there's stupid people, and, you know, just because you have three letters, you know, in your title like CEO or CIO doesn't mean you know what you're talking about. Doesn't mean you're a good person. Just means you got a job.
I can talk somewhat to education in that a couple of things. I know when I started working at this school, we tried to stay two steps ahead of our high school hackers with as much software as we could find because they were always into something. What we do is we release, the teachers give us sites that need to be released by our software if they're going to use something like that. But other than that, they would either have to log in from home to get to what they want. But everything is documented on our site.
Yeah, there's been an increase of that. It's something I'm a bit timid to actually bring up because it might have repercussions, but God only knows. Something I did when I was in high school over in California, I was put on an independent study program, mainly because of the fact that the standard pace of school bored their living hell out of me, and I always kept jumping ahead. So what I wound up doing is actually going on a computer-based independent study program. I'd go in, work on the computer for a while, take these stupid tests, and say that I knew this lovely stuff. What they didn't realize is that the records were also kept through the same network and everything, and was extremely insecure. The people that were responsible for the database were stupid enough to do the old passwords underneath the keyboard, the stuff like that. So essentially, I'm an idiot in science because of it, because I got 2 years worth of science for free and another year's worth of social studies. I think it was social studies I got. I just went in there, gave myself the grades, and that was it. So I regret it.
I'm that person that takes care of the grades.
Be very careful.
Oh, I'm very careful. But we lock everything down as best we can. But, I mean, I've got, you know, third graders that can program better than I can probably because we are private schools in a very advanced private school.
Possible solution to that.
Have third graders work for me, I've thought about it.
Yes, basically make it as a friendly challenge, and it'll be a point of pride to make it secure as possible. They'll learn from it, and you have a friendly relationship with them. Any more questions?
Okay, well, we are getting near the end of our time slot. Do we have one?
Guys, I'm on the 2:30 slot. I don't have anything to set up. You guys want to talk up till 2:30? It's fine by me.
Okay, we need to reset the sound recording. So, okay, here's a question over here.
This is the one you're going to love me for. After this entire panel, and we're kind of all sitting there going, oh, this is just wonderful, dark, dismal, dreary future we're looking at with the thought police coming in and everything else, how do we change it? What's the best way to start from here? I have my view about politics, too, because politics is still money. I mean, you can only vote for the people who are there on the ballots. So how do we go about changing it?
I can't say enough for getting involved in open, honest communication about what the expectations are, even if that's only just with your manager, and bubble that up through the system. And if you need to, you know, jump over a few levels of hierarchy. But there's so much, you know, it's real easy to just kind of sit around and whine and complain about the situation. You've got to get up and do something constructive. This involves perhaps, you know, your represented officials in legislature, but it also means talking to your company, your boss, and setting the expectations. Maybe you even want to take the initiative to write what you think should be a good policy that balances the issues and put that forward. There are groups, and typically there are ad hoc groups within most major corporations that are defining corporate policy. If you don't see a policy that you like, you should at least communicate what your feelings are, and maybe even get involved and get on that committee and become involved and try to change that. It's so easy to complain so often, but at least, you know, get involved with the process. Before you condemn the process, at least get involved with it and try to work as an agent for positive change.
You could always take the cop out and move to a freer country like, I don't know, China, Russia.
A quick thing on that, my other comment was something else, but a quick thing on that is when the East and West Germany unified, East Germans lost rights as far as electronic freedoms go, because they had done away with the laws against low power FM broadcasts and a lot of the internet, you know, the hacking laws and all this, and all of a sudden they got the ones from the liberated enlightened Western Germany imposed upon them. What I was going to say, though, is another in some situations, this isn't by no means a first resort, but consumer and employee disobedience, if it can be done on a large scale. That my favorite story of this is the maybe legendary thing about the phone company's billing system in the 70s or whatever it was. There was a billing error, the way their computer system was set up, they couldn't carry credit over. So if you overwrote your phone bill, they cut you a check for the difference and mailed it to you. And so when somebody figured it out, they got everybody, you know, people across the country to overpay their phone bill by 1 cent every time. And the phone company couldn't get their mammoth computer, you know, system turned off in time, and so they had to take out full page ads in national magazines saying, please don't do this anymore, it was funny once, but you know, please stop. So I mean, things like that.
We've fallen and we can't get up.
Exactly. There are things like that, like the putting, you know, everybody putting all the NSA killers in their cigs, you know, just things like that, that's just a little thing. If there's some of them that, if enough people do it, you know, like Arlo Guthrie said, if enough people do it, it's a movement. You know, but so it's there. Some of those are probably possible, and there are enough ways over the net and over certain publications and things to get these sort of plans out. And if they're coordinated, it's, you can't fire everybody at once.
Yeah.
So if so, everybody else will be looking for a job, so you're good.
It's kind of like if you can get a herd of about 20 people flying down the highway at 100 miles an hour, what are they going to do?
Now they take pictures of all of them. And
good point. Good point.
McDonnell Douglas makes $28 on each one.
Ooh.
McDonnell Douglas now rents out a lot of the red light and speeding enforcement cameras. It's, well, whatever it is. This was based on a Post article from 2 months ago. So,
okay, last question. We do need to wrap up.
No questions.
All right.
No vegetables to be thrown. All right.
Okay. Thanks for coming.
No, that's all right.
Thanks for coming.